And welcome to another installment of Mercenary Musings Radio, an exclusive audio service presenting views and insight from the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. How you doing, Mickey?
I'm doing well, Rob, and you?
Pretty good, and I think that this is probably one of your favorite times of year. Baseball season now underway. Your Cardinals off to a little bit of a shaky start, but this is a long season, isn't it?
There's 162 games total. There are four down, so a long way to go, Rob.
Okay, well, I'll pull for the Cardinals for you, Mickey. This time out, you decided that we should talk about what very well could be the most unloved commodity in the market today, and that is natural gas. You take a look at the price chart of this. Pretty depressing if you've sunk some money into natural gas futures or companies that produce this stuff. It is a pretty dismal chart. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Right now, though, let's kick it off with a natural gas 101 lesson from you. How is natural gas formed, Mickey? What is it the result of?
Well, it's a result of increased temperature and pressure on a petroleum reservoir. So commonly, an oil field will have some gas associated with it. As it gets deeper and deeper, then more of that's converted to lighter hydrocarbons. Interestingly enough, Rob, the first petroleum well that was ever drilled was drilled in a gas field, which is now being looked at again, and that was in Fredonia, New York, in 1821.
Wow.
The first natural gas well. And that gas was used for street lamps and domestic uses.
Didn't know that. Interesting stuff. According to the U.S. the Department of Energy, certainly the demand for natural gas since that initial well, Mickey, back in the 1800s, it's really taken off for the demand for this stuff. Right now, today, 52% of all homes in the United States use natural gas for heating. So this is obviously a very crucial fuel. It's used in transportation and industry, of course, as well. Despite the huge demand, though, still plenty of gas around.
Well, in the United States, we certainly do, and Canada right along with it. The U.S. now has the sixth largest reserves in the world, but I think that's probably a little bit skewed because our SEC requires probably greater confidence before we're converted into reserves. But we are the world's largest producer of natural gas, with Russia a fairly close second.
And as far as the potential for natural gas is concerned, Mickey, I've read that there are enough proven and potential supplies in the United States, large enough to last about 100 years or more. Does that jive with the research that you've conducted?
Absolutely, yeah. We've got really an abundance of natural gas, and the new developments in shale gas have really moved the U.S. into a commanding position in the natural gas world.
Okay, well, let's pick it up on that shale gas. Certainly plenty of new shale gas discoveries in the news. This is one area of the natural gas sector that's getting a lot of media attention lately. Tell us about shale gas, how it differs from conventional natural gas and the technology that is used in discovering shale gas.
Well, it from a chemical point of view, it's the same as regular natural gas. Natural gas, shale gas, they're the same thing. They're mainly methane with a few higher hydrocarbons mixed in. Specifically, propane is probably the second most important. But the difference is natural gas is produced from what would be called conventional, usually sandstone reservoirs, so rocks that are relatively porous. Shale gas has been known for a long time. The first gas well I ever drilled, the one in Fredonia, New York, produced out of shale beds. Shale is a finer grain sediment. It has less porosity and permeability. But what's happened over the last few years is horizontal well technology has been developed, along with established hydrofracking, which is essentially pressurizing with water and chemical and sand mixture, and creating artificial cracks in a rock. Those two technologies combined have led to a boom in the shale gas production, especially in the mid-continent area of the United States, typical oil-producing states such as Texas and Louisiana and Arkansas, very important. Just about every state now that has an oil well has a new shale gas field or potential being developed.
Okay, and shale gas production has been rising quite sharply in recent years, Mickey. is the development at shale gas at a level that you would anticipate, or would you think that shale gas development should be even more advanced and more widespread than it is today?
Well, I think we all wish it would be more developed. It is methane burns, natural gas being methane burns, cleaner than either oil or coal, significantly cleaner, about 30% in the case of oil, 45% in the case of coal. So from that regard, it is more suitable for production of electricity from power plants.
Mm-hmm.
The problem we have, especially in the United States, is and it makes sense, natural gas is much less dense. It's not a liquid, therefore it has transportation, infrastructure, and storage problems that oil as a liquid does not have. Basically, you have a gas field, you need a pipeline from that gas field to the area of use. So we're lacking in pipelines, we're lacking in infrastructure. Gas has to be stored in underground reservoirs for the most part. So it becomes, in the United States, we have this abundance of natural gas, but we don't have the developed infrastructure to deal with it. Therefore, the low price of about $4.25 mm-hmm. per million BTU lately.
Talk to us about environmental concerns, Mickey. Whenever we have a mining operation, there are some environmental issues that always have to be dealt with. The environmental concerns surrounding shale gas production, how deep are those worries and concerns right now?
Well, I think they're increasingly of concern as the environmental community becomes aware of the shale gas glut, if you will, in the United States. Horizontal well drilling, hydrofrack system uses a combination of water, sand, and chemicals. So there has been come increased pressure on government regulators to require disclosure of what chemicals are used.
Mm-hmm.
But it's same as anything, Rob. There are trade-offs on everything we do. I mean, we're seeing that now with the nuclear crisis in Japan. All of a sudden, nuclear is not so green as it was before. We've got solar power plants in the Mojave Desert. There's five of them being built, and there's five lawsuits trying to stop those. The offshore wind farm on the East Coast, there's now a lawsuit to stop that. We haven't really talked about the liquefied natural gas industry, which is very much booming, especially in parts of the world that don't have gas fields and are rather remote. But we've had terminals stopped by environmentalists and mm-hmm. politicians in California, Maine, and New York over the last few years trying to stop building of natural gas terminals. So it's kind of the NIMBY syndrome, not in my backyard. And the deal is, Rob, every kind of energy we use has some sort of trade-off, and there's environmental consequences to everything. So unless we choose to freeze in the dark or turn a light switch on and then go light a candle or burn kerosene in a lamp, we've got to have energy, and it's got to come from someplace.
Okay. And how does natural gas fit into the energy policy of the current administration in Washington? Is nat gas playing a major role?
Well, not really. Obama will come out and say we're going to attack our energy problems from all fronts, and I will agree with that. We need all sorts of alternative. Every alternative we have, we need to look at and develop if we can, because we need to be independent in the United States in energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen soon, but there are massive subsidies being put in place for the solar and wind energies and biomass, but not a lot for the petroleum industry, specifically the natural gas industry. You know, everything has its trade-off. Natural gas is mainly methane. It is the most onerous greenhouse gas by far, unless the eco-fascists decide to eat a pill of Beano for every meal, most of the methane in the world is a product of animal, bacteria, human waste. So, like I say, there's trade-off in everything. We're going to have to make some hard decisions. Personally, I think gas should be an important part of our energy budget, along with uranium, wind, solar, biofuels, geothermal, and oil and coal and whatever we can conjure up here, because it's important, I think, to be tried to be energy independent.
Okay, well, I know that you and I, Mickey, are doing our part to reduce that nasty gas that's emanating from four-legged beasties. We've gone out for a few good steaks, so we're doing our part, aren't we?
Yeah, you know, I raise beef, and I'm just going to go throw a steak on the grill here as soon as we're done with this interview.
Oh, you lucky man. We'll wrap it up on that note. Next time out, what do you want to focus on?
Well, I think we'll go back to our original plan, and that was to continue our talks about strategic metals. We got off track this week, but natural gas has been the news, and I thought it was very apropos to go in and attack this one right away. So we'll look forward to picking on some strategic metal I don't like next time.
Okay, sounds good, Mickey. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Take care.
Okay, thanks a lot, Rob.
Okay, that's Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist, heading out to the backyard to throw a slab of meat on his barbecue. Lucky fella. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. At Mercenary Musings Radio, I'm Robert Graham. Thanks for listening.